Are you trying to get crazy with this, see? Don't you know I'm loco?
What up, no, this is Zed Dog from Cypress Hill. I'm chilling with the Odd Man. I'm down with the King on Maximum FM Hip Hop.
Turn up the bass!
You're listening to Down with the Kings on Maximum FM Hip Hop.
Hey, what's going on? We're back here on Maximum FM Hip Hop. You got the Odd Man in the area, and we are chilling now with a guy that was part of one of the founding members of an important group back in the 90s. Cypress Hill was doing big things back then, and we're pleased to have Sendog in the house, man. What's happening, man?
All good, my man. All good. How are you doing?
We're good. I mean, hey, listen, I appreciate the opportunity to kind of chat with you a little bit. You know, we spent a lot of time on this program, you know, paying respects to an era in hip-hop that was probably one of the most significant or important ones. And certainly Cypress Hill was a big part of that. When you kind of think back to that time, what do you think sort of Cypress Hill, and when you look at, you know, what their place is in the hip-hop landscape, where do you think they all fit into all that?
Well, you know, I think we were different straight out the box. You know, there was a lot of classic hip-hop being recorded around the time that we formed Cypress Hill, and when Cypress Hill first came out on the scene, there was, you know, a lot of legendary acts doing the thing, so you know, we knew that we had to be different sonically, and we had to be different vocally, you know, with the lyrics, because there was just so many good people out at that time. So we did our homework tight, you know what I mean? We put it together, you know, we thought about some really cool concepts. And I think that our what we belong at is, you know, out there kind of like on some, like, you know, on what is known as that other shit, you know. And
right.
I think that's the splash. The splash that we came out when we first dropped, that's the splash that it made, and you know, a lot of people gravitated to it and you know, and liked it, you know, so it was
right.
It was a bigger response than what we expected, for sure.
I can imagine. And you know, oftentimes you know, groups or artists that are first on that come up, they got that local sort of popularity, if you will. They got that local support. And then when they look to make that next big splash, that next big hit, you know, that's oftentimes seen as a big leap. When you guys sort of made that leap from, you know, to local success to, you know, on the big stage, how quickly was that for you?
That was within a couple of years, man, because we had put our first self-titled debut album in 91, and then by 93, we were the number one band in the world. So that came really quick and really fast, and, you know, and get ready and hold on, because it turned into a wild ride after that, you know what I mean?
So did you find yourself pinching yourself, going, this can't be for real?
You know, when we were doing, I think that year, 93, at the end of the year, we stopped in and did a New Year's Eve show with, like, Nirvana. And I was like, okay, this is getting pretty serious here. You
right.
know, you definitely look around, and I was always thankful of the fact that, you know, that happened, and people, you know, dug Cypress that much to blow us up like that. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I was like, every now and then I'd be like, whoa, this is crazy, you know?
Right, right. No, and I can imagine, especially, again, you know, because the beginnings are always humble, right? Always these humble beginnings, and the next thing it takes off, and you're on for a ride that you didn't think you'd be on, man.
Yeah, you know, there's a few moments there when you go, you know, you really get taken back. And I think when we got offered to do Woodstock 94, that was a big deal. And then when we did Saturday Night Live, you know,
wow,
one of America's biggest shows, we, you know, we were definitely, you know, that was definitely one of those things that made you look around and be like, okay, this thing's taking off, like, big time, you know?
with that, like, something like Saturday Night Live, would that be one of the things that you absolutely had no idea, like, way out of left field? Wait a second, we're on the biggest show in America?
Yeah, it was like that. When we got the call, I was like, what, are you kidding me? Like, you mean Eddie Murphy Saturday Night Live, that one? You know?
That's hot.
So it was wild, you know, that was a really, you know, crazy time. And, you know, but I'm glad that we lived through, you know, we lived that time, and, you know, we're able to talk about it, even though we did get banned from SNL. It was a good time to, we had fun doing it.
Tell our listeners about getting banned from SNL, because some people have no idea what we're talking about here.
Well, you know, we got to do two songs that we played in Pain in the Brain, and then we played our next single, which was Ain't Going Out Like That. And mm-hmm. in between songs, I guess, you know, DJ Muggs decided he wanted to smoke some weed on the stage. And he had actually asked me to do it. And I was like, dude, are you crazy? We're going to get thrown off this show, man, you know. But so when we went out of the dressing room to go do the song,
right,
I thought it was a done deal that we weren't going to be smoking. But he had a joint in his pocket as soon as the song started. He went off talking shit about how they tell him they can't smoke on TV. But if you think about it, it was a move that was way ahead of its time.
It was, yes.
And, yeah. And eventually, Channel 4 and all that, they did the political thing and they had to throw us off the show. They threw us off the show forever. They meant it, you know.
Mm.
But for a moment in time, you know, it would have been cool to go back and do some other appearances there from different albums, you know, that we had success with. But, we got to do it once, and
yep.
it was the coolest thing on earth. And now, you know, we're banned along with people like Sinead O'Connor and other big-timers. So
that's it. So you're in a special place in history. You're in a special place in history right now.
yeah, that's like a total Led Zeppelin move, rock star move. Oh,
that's it.
You know, these guys got banned from, like, you know, some kind, you know what I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge thing.
Let's talk about the cannabis and the weed and support, because I think what's really interesting with Cypress Hill, I mean, obviously that's a big part of who the group was and what they stood for, but it wasn't just a gimmick. I mean, this is something that you legitimately, the group was advocating for in terms of legalization, and it wasn't something that you just threw in to be part of your shtick, so to speak.
No, the whole thing with marijuana was there from before all that. I mean, I wouldn't advise any kid to do that, but to do what I did, because I was smoking since I was like 12 or 13. But, you know, marijuana has always been a very big part of our lives. And we always, you know, we were taught that there was so much more that you could do with it just other than smoking and getting off it, like, you know, product to live by. And that's what I thought. That's, you know, that's one of the areas where we thought where people were, you know, not educated on. And, you know, we put some facts on there, like on the sleeve of that album where we put those facts on there,
mm-hmm.
you know. People didn't even know that you can make, you know, like everyday, you know, products with it. And that's what we were kind of pushing. That's what kind of set us apart is, you know, yeah, we're stoners and everything, but, you know, we know what we're talking about, you know.
Right. Is there any aspect of marijuana that you introduced to what you're doing that maybe you look back and go, maybe we would have done it differently, maybe we, you know, we should have done it that way? Is there any aspect or, you know, what you did is what you stood stand by as a group?
Well, I think that if anything else, another aspect, I think, like, if we would have been on top of the first to do, like, marijuana clothing back then, you know, that would have been a cool thing. But I think we represented well with who we were, you know, mm-hmm. and what we do. You know, we represented the Hill, you know, what we're really good. And seeing what it has turned into now across America and other countries, we're like, there's a lot of legalization going down right now, you know, globally.
Right.
You know, and I don't always think about it, but yeah, I guess, you know, we had something to do with that by being who we were and what we represented and what our merchandise looked like and just what we rapped about, you know, it helped start to move it.
When you know, I remember earlier when we spoke, you talked about the fact that you did a lot of homework in terms of formulating your style and who you wanted to be and what you wanted to represent. Was there? I guess I'm most curious as to when you got to that point that this is it. Like, did it take long for you to get there in terms of as you were, you know, trial and error? We want to do this. Do we want to do this? Did it take you long to get to the point where yes, this is who we are and here's where we're going to be moving forth, kind of a thing?
You know what, man, from the first Cypress Hill demo that we did, which was in 1988, it took 2 years to get to where we wanted to go. I mean, mm-hmm. no, about 2.5 years. By 2.5 years, we, you know, formed the band, started recording as it, got a record deal, and came out. So that's that. But back then, you know what I mean? Well, you know, we were fully committed to Cypress Hill. It wasn't like we,
right.
you know, we were doing the side job things or anything like that.
Yeah.
We all lived together in one apartment and went at it every single day, trying to come up with like different sounds and different vocal, you know, approaches that would set us apart from the rest of the field. So, I mean, it was like, we actually like crammed, you know, like, you know, those 2.5 years was like actually, you know, there was a lot of hard work involved.
Hmm. But I could imagine, again, because none of that stuff's, you know, it doesn't come overnight. You got to develop it and feel it and almost live it to be, because what you want to be able to connect with your audience. And I think one of the things that, you know, your live shows, Cypress Hill's live shows, were absolutely amazing for its ability to keep the audience engaged. And that's very much a part of what you guys did quite well, I would say.
You know that stuff about doing the shows and all that, man, that comes from years of being a music fan and, you know, going to see, you know, and Parliament and you know, Black Sabbath and all the crazy shows that would come through, and, you know, Pink Floyd and all those just great concerts like Prince, the Revolution and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we were fans of concerts, you know what I mean? We would go and get stoned and watch these great concerts, and that was the main point of it, was like, you know, enjoying a great concert. So when we, you know, when we got around doing our own thing, I don't think we even noticed, but we started putting a lot of, you know, stuff in there to make people trip out and, you know, feel like they're part of the show as well. Like, not just watching the show, but they're part of it.
Right.
You know, and I think the great band, you know, the tour, you know, the big worldwide tour band, they do that. You know, like Alice Cooper, he does that. You know, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? There's a lot of acts that make you feel like you're there along with them. And I think we took that, you know, that element from watching all those legendary groups and, you know, when we did our own thing, you know, just let them feel like they're part of it, you know?
Right, right. So it wasn't even like, you know, you sat and planned that this is an aspect of what we'll do. It just naturally happened, it sounds like, based on what you're saying here.
Yeah, exactly, man. You know what I mean? It's just like, I mean, it's like you're hanging around with us, you know, in our own backyard, and you're part of whatever we're doing, you're part of it. And then I got that in return from a lot of fans that have gone to our shows and for the first time, and they're like, oh, this part you do is cool with the, you know, with the fan interaction and stuff like that. So it's just, you know, trial and error. You learn by what you do and what works and what doesn't.
Gotcha. The song "Insane in the Brain," obviously, you know, that's probably one of your biggest songs. To this day, you can still hear it played, which I think it really speaks to not only the longevity, but the impact that the song has. I mean, you know, talk almost 20 years later, and it's still getting airplay and still getting love. That's got to feel good.
Because especially because we never thought that song would have that kind of effect and power and longevity that it has. It was really just a warm-up song so that people would know that we were getting ready to come out with a new album. It was like a tester song, you know?
Right.
Like, we all agreed, like, okay, this should be like the, you know, like, hey, Cypress on his way back, here's a tease. And a week later, our manager calls us up and says, hey, this song is number one here and number one there, and it was, like, number one in 20-something countries. And I was like, whoa. It just took off from there. And to this day, it's still one of our, you know, our funnest songs to perform.
Right. And you weren't even going to do a video for that song, right, if I recall correctly.
No, we weren't. It was just like a little sample, like, you know, get ready, you know. So when it came down to it, we were like, oh, okay, now I got to do a video for it. And I think the video, you know, I think we chose the right video director, the right move, you know, the right settings. And that video was, you know, instant, it was just everywhere, you know.
Right.
We went
right.
overnight to work, you know. Because the whole crowd in San Francisco at that video shoot really were the ones that set off all the moshing and stage diving at our shows, because those kids that came out for that video were doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, right after that video came out, all of our shows were acting and people were behaving like that.
Right. Well, I think that's the perfect song to do it to if you wanted one. I mean, that would be it, to get people hype and, you know, jumping up and down.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
Sure. So how about this then? We're talking about the song "Insane in the Brain." You want to throw it real quick, and we'll give our listeners a chance to hear the song that wasn't supposed to be as big as it was.
No, you know, it wasn't, but it turned out that way, you know. So I just, at that point, you know, you just got to hang, you know, let the song do its thing, and I just, I'm thankful that song became the monster that it did, and, you know, kind of like fueled the career.
For sure. So for our listeners, this is "Insane in the Brain," Cypress Hill. Sundog will be right back after we all hear this.
Were you trying to get crazy with this, eh? Don't you know I'm loco? Ah.
I'm thinking. It's all over when I go out drinking. Oh, making my mind slow. That's why I don't f*** with the big four. Oh, bro, I got to maintain. Cause a like me is going insane.
Down with the King, Send Dog. You just heard "Insane in the Brain," and as we talked about before we threw to the song, one of the biggest songs the group's developed, and the fact that it's still getting loved is awesome. I guess are people stopping on the street and start singing, you know, singing lines from that song. Do you get that?
Yeah, that happens. You know, that happens. It happens quite a few times before. It. I mean, I've seen people walk up to me and they got like a new tattoo, like a couple skulls, and "Insane in the Brain" written and around it. And, I mean, like I said, it's whole life, I guess, and it took off. It decided not to come back, you know, or come down, you know.
Right, right. That's got to feel incredible as an artist to know that you're having, you know, that kind of impact on people that's out of something that you've created, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to know what it felt like to, you know, have a major hit record, and our stuff on our first record was, you know, dope, and it was kill and all that, like kill a man and, you know, hand on the pump and stuff like that. But I mean, insane when you're like, you're getting play, you know, in the smallest of countries around the world. That's a whole different animal, you know.
Man,
and it's just like, you know, and I'm thankful that, you know, that I got to experience that, you know, couple times in my career, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever, but insane to this day still like gets them going, you know. If they're just sitting there at our show, but by the time that song comes on, they're, you know, feeling like they're 15 again.
For sure. Back in the day, I mean, sort of talk about the some of the relationships you had with hip hop acts and groups, because you know, one thing that really stands clear, you know, and I said off the top really about the, you know, the era in which Cypress came was an important era for hip hop, because it had so much diversity. You'd have a show and you'd have, you know, say yourself, maybe you might have a Tribe Called Quest or maybe KRS-One and all these different acts on stage, but it's all hip hop, man. That's gotta certainly feel good about the music when you see the diversity on that level.
Yeah, that was the beginning of like cultural diversity coming into the game, and making it more wide open, because there was great other acts that had good contributions like Third Bass, and I'm even gonna put Vanilla Ice in there. That really opened up the game and made people look like, oh shit, anybody could do it, you know.
Right.
So that, right around that era, and then Cypress Hill with this, with Latino movement, and you had other kids contributing to it, like on the West Coast, like Kid Frost and my brother Mellow Man Ace, and so that was just the beginning of that time, So I'm glad we were able to represent when it was very important to represent your race and stuff,
Right. Right. Did you recognize that at that time what you were doing for Latinos, a young Latino kid that wanted to rap? Did you see yourself as sort of that kind of figurehead at that point, or were you just sort of out there doing what you do?
No, we didn't either. I didn't anyway. I don't think the group could either recognize that we were becoming like a little Latino kids, like go-to group or anything. We were just trying to be ourselves. We knew that there had been other acts that had, Latino kids that had success. But we didn't know that we were getting to that level of, that we had gotten to. And until it's obvious in your face, But we were just trying to be Cypress Hill and be like our idols, Cheech and Chong, but the hip-hop term, the hip-hop guy version.
Right. I think you guys did a great job of emulating the hip hop version of Cheech and Chong, no doubt.
Well, they liked it, so I guess we were good,
No doubt. And you mentioned your brother a few moments ago, and I think it's important to sort of talk about that connection, because he was a Mellow Man Ace, was a very much part of Cypress Hill in the early days. That kind of been kind of cool experience, rolling with your brother in that regard and, making history in that manner.
Yeah, being part of the same block and having, the same love for hip-hop that, both of us did. And he was part of our... He was part of our first band that we put together when we were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then he decided he wanted to do his own solo thing. And, at one point, I think it was the same year that we started Cypress, which was 88.
Right.
He wanted to go ahead and, branch off and do a thing that he had success with. And, we were all very proud for him,
Right. Right. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. I mean, when you do anything like that with family, That's got to feel good, too. So, shout out to Mellow Man Ace out there doing his thing. One of the distinctive sounds of Cypress was Be Real in his voice, and, it's almost nasally at times. Was that something that was also developed, or something that was just naturally it?
Well, when B would rap and he was sober, he didn't sound like that. But as soon as he got stoned, he kind of turned more easily. And Muggs and I picked up on it one day, and we were like, because we heard him do that nasal style at a nightclub, and we were like, rap like you did that day, So, and then he just took with it and ran with it and made it his own and gave it his own identity. And,
right.
And I think that's one of the things that was very key and important,
yes.
In Cypress Hill history, his voice.
Well, yeah, it's very distinctive sound, and again, when you heard that, you're like, "Yep, the hill is here," and they're in the house, man. So it's a very, very distinctive sound. Seth, I appreciate taking the time and chatting, with the history of the Cypress Hill, and wonder if perhaps you can give our listeners a sort of update what you're up to these days, what's happening. It's keeping you busy.
Well, right now, we stay busy with Cypress. Still touring globally. The demand is still there for the band around the world. So, we're still, going to the bank behind that. And then we just wrapped up a new album. I believe album number 10, I believe.
Wow.
That's correct. It's produced by, our original producer, DJ Muggs.
Muggs.
And I mean, and I'm loving the sound of direction and all that stuff. So that's, you know, that's part of what I've been doing. And then I stay recording on my own. You know, I've always been, you know, fascinated with like heavy metal and hip hop combined.
Yep.
And I got a new little gig going down called Power Flow. And with some of my bros, and you know, it's some heavy rap on some heavy music, and you know, and hopefully I get that out there one day, so you know, people can check it out and see what they think about it, type thing, you know.
Sure.
And then I, you know, plan to do another like solo hip hop album, and just create another avenue to go make some dough.
Right. No, I hear you. And I think the fact that, you know, you start, when you talk about the demand for the band, that's absolutely amazing, considering, you know, again, we're talking 20 plus years later and still, you know, everyone's still loving the Hill and what they represent. Who are some of your sort of influences as you were developing yourself as an artist? Who did you look up to?
You know, hip-hop wise, I looked up to EPMD made a profound, you know, thing on me. That's where, when I saw them guys, I started wearing the bucket hat, because EPMD wore bucket hat. You know, and that's what I, but they didn't wear them all the time. I'm like, I'm going to wear the shit out of mine, like, every day, you know, and just their trade-off, how they complimented each other's voices,
yeah.
Just so, so nice, you know what I mean? Their performance, we got to see them perform at an old school, like legendary almost, if you will, hip hop club in LA called Casa Camino Real. And that's where Craig Mack and Tony G from 1580 KDAY would bring these acts down to play, you know, in like a really rough area town. And I got to see EP together, you know, Public Enemy, of course, Chuck with his vocal force, you know, Flav with his antics and his just all around energy. And I call him like a rap ninja, because you see them perform, he's doing like, you know, flying kicks in the air,
yeah.
Like, you know, 6 feet high, you know,
sure.
I was blown away by that. And then, you know, of course, you know, I got to give the most props to Run DMC, because it wasn't until I saw them that I said to myself, like, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to rap,
right.
You know, I want to be like these guys. And that was when I was 17 years old, you know.
Yeah,
and I was like, wow, they really blew my mind, you know what I mean, to the point where, like, I told my brother, hey, let's start a rap group, and he was like, what's that? You know, but I knew that it was something special about it, and, you know, I put, like, at that point, I kind of had a feeling like it was going to happen, I just didn't know when, you know, so I really just basically, you know, quit school and started working, and you know, just the hip-hop aspect was always running our lives. It was breakdancing, it was rapping, or,
sure.
You know, just listening hip-hop jams, you know, hip-hop just took over our lives completely, you know?
Well, when you mentioned Run DMC, I think one of the things that they did from an influencing standpoint, and I think it's resonated in yourselves, is the fact that they made it okay for, you know, hip-hop and rap to come and rock to come together. Like, you know, you can rap on rock beats now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they did that, and that was very much their yeah. Identifier. I mean, they're in the, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. My goodness, for a rap group.
Yeah, and that's what I liked about it the most, is that, you know, they combined my both favorite musics, you know what I mean? Because since I was a little kid, I've been listening to, you know, Aerosmith, Walk This Way, you know what I mean? I remember that song from when I was a youngster, and then when they came back with Aerosmith and they did that, I was like, man, I was really blown away by that move. That was like a stroke of genius, you know?
Right,
and
right.
I think for the very first time I saw them, which was like, I was like in 11th grade, and I saw Soul Train on Saturday. And that's the first time I saw Run DMC and had a live band with them. And they were jamming out some, you know, some cool riffs and some hardcore rhymes. And I was just like, okay, that's it. That's the perfect world. You know what I mean?
That's it.
You know, I didn't think it right away. Subliminally, it stuck into my brain. And left me thinking, like, you know, like, since that day on, we were always coming up with, you know, trying to do something, you know what I mean? Trying to be wherever the hip-hop element was going to be at. We wanted to be there.
Right.
And we saw a lot of cool shit growing up, man. You know, we got a chance to hang out, you know, with, like, Ice-T at an early age and his whole Rhyme Syndicate crew, and, you know, see him, you know, busting raps at Venice Beach, you know. And then when they get to know you by name, like, oh, shit, Ice-T called me by my name. Shit, you know. Got all licked. I had to take that one in stride, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a great time growing up to be a hip-hopper and to see what hip-hop, you know, turned into and has become the world's number one music.
Yep.
You know, I remember when there was no hip hop yet on the West Coast. You know, it took for a minute for it to get here. It was on the East Coast.
Yep.
You know, so it's awesome to see what the movement has become.
And I'm sure it feels awesome, you know, that you're a big part of it, that, you know, that you and Cypress and the whole Cypress Hill group, you know, had an influence in fact, because, I mean, look, man, I mean, you know, the music is big. It's, like you said, number one music in the world, and it's only getting bigger.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that we have our itch there in the annals of history, of hip hop history, that we have, like, okay, Cypress Kids were here, you know, they came through, and, you know, I think a lot of people have given up on us, you know, thinking like,
right,
you know, a lot of people thought me and B Real were just, you know, a couple of stoned out gangbangers and they're never gonna go nowhere. Fuck those dudes, you know what I mean? But we came through and we came thick, and you know, and our career's not over yet. It's still going strong. It's still thriving, and we still feel that, you know, we can make, you know, great music no matter, you know, what decade or era we're in. It's all about, you know, how hard we work on it. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, you see, you know, Cypress Hill with another hit song one day, you know. that would kick everybody in the ass right there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So,
Imagine that. Well, hey, you know what? I would love to see that day. Again, I got a lot of respect for the Hill and what you guys did and yourself. And, again, appreciate you rolling through and being down with the Kingston Dog.
Right on, man. Hey, and I want to say thank you for, you know, hitting me up and getting at me to, you know, have this conversation. You know, it's always great when you get to talk about the real, you know, the real content, the real meat of hip-hop and what hip-hop was and began. And I think how it began and how, you know, how big it is now. And I thank you for, you know, this opportunity, having me on there, dude. It's really cool.
Appreciate you, son, dog. You take care of yourself, and we'll be in touch down the road.
Right on, man. Hey, and one more thing.
Yeah.
Check out for Cypress Hill's new album, Elephants on Acid, coming out soon.
That's it. You heard it here, right here on Down with the Kings. To our listeners, we'll be right back.